Jesus said to his disciples to stay in Jerusalem until the time comes for them to be clothed with the Holy Spirit, the power on high. This Ascension Sunday, I'd like us to focus on what that means in the spiritual sense, to stay in Jerusalem. But before I do, I'd like to invite us to pause for a moment. And I want to bring to your attention something you might already be very, very well aware of. And that is that after each exhale, and when we breathe, there's a pause. And then we automatically, unconsciously inhale. I invite us to take a moment now to notice that. So just breathe in and then exhale. And after the exhale, just notice what happens next. And see if you can experience that moment of pause after the exhale and before the inhale. Did you notice it? How many people noticed it? Great, great. And with practice, you'll notice it all the more. Noticing that pause after the exhale and before the inhale is actually an excellent way of helping us when we're feeling especially anxious or stressed or confused, disillusioned, fearful. If we can find that pause, it actually helps physiologically to calm our system, as well as psychologically and spiritually. We are living through the biblical story at the time of great disillusionment and anxiety and worry on the part of the disciples. They had high hopes. They had a leader who they were sure were going to bring them all the way to the top of the mountain. But he was killed. And now he's leaving them again. George Dole, a Swedenborgian scholar, talks about in the Bible that there are cycles of promise, fulfillment, disillusionment, and then transformation. Cycles, there's one big cycle and then there's lots and lots of epicycles. And those cycles are there because we live through those cycles, maybe many times a day. Promise, fulfillment, disillusionment, transformation. And we live through those cycles in larger ways in our life too. The disciples are there feeling disillusionment and fear. And Jesus is telling them, stay in Jerusalem and wait for the power of on high. Now in the biblical story, places, according to our theology and understanding, symbolize states of mind. So Jerusalem symbolizes a state of mind, as does Bethlehem, as does a mountain, as does a valley, as does the sea. Many, many different states of mind. Jerusalem symbolizes an extremely important state of mind. It corresponds to, it symbolizes a state of mind, our state of mind, when we are most fully and deeply connected to God. Symbolizes a state of mind when we are feeling compassion and trust. Deep compassion and trust. The advice that Jesus is giving his disciples is radical. Usually when we're feeling disillusioned, lost, betrayed, empty, we slip into our fight or flight. The adrenaline starts pumping, and we do what we can to fill ourselves up again. Andy Simpson, a few weeks ago, was talking about some of the common ways that we try to fill ourselves up. He especially highlighted shopping. There's food. There are drugs. Drink. Endless activity. Endless work. Lots of ways that we try to fill and fill and fill. Another thing that we do during times like that is to fill ourselves, not necessarily with things we even think are going to satisfy, but with darkness and condemnation, actually either of ourselves or of others. I read a line this week that I liked. You could never get enough of that which will, you can never get enough of that which will not satisfy. You can yet never get enough of that which will not satisfy. Jesus' advice when we are facing special worry and anxiety and disillusionment is radical. His advice is to stay in Jerusalem, a place of trust and compassion. And incidentally, a place where we are not alone. Stay together with those parts of you that nourish you, with those friends and family that encourage trust and compassion. And pause there and wait for what will happen next. There's a word that Swedenborg uses from the Latin that I like a lot, and it's conatus. You'll only find it in the very, very biggest of dictionaries. And it has about 7 definitions. I won't go into them all now, but I'll tell you about some of them to help give you this picture. But it's a word that's about pausing. Cosmologically, conatus is what you have before the first point in creation. Before anything is, there is conatus. Physiologically, conatus is what you have before you can move any part of your body. Before you even have the impulse to move, you have conatus. Theologically, it is the avenue of communication between divinity and humanity, between our highest, deepest, truest knowledge and love and wisdom, and our outer self that lives in the world. Spiral-shaped, by the way. It's also the word that philosophers used for energy a couple of centuries ago. Conatus. What we have before we have something. And I like to think of it as a very deep pause. I like to think of it as our being in Jerusalem together. Maybe scared, maybe angry, maybe sad, maybe confused. But striving to pause, to find again our breath. Do you know why that pause is a place where we can find compassion and trust? This reality that we experience is created out of love, for love, and in truth. And so when we come to that true deep place in any moment, it's like digging through all the layers until we find what really is. And what really is is love. Compassion, understanding, and truth. And yet that isness is something that we get away from. I heard another word, a little phrase I liked this week. It was about ego, E-G-O. Oh, now I forget it. Hold on. Let me pause. Edging God out. E-G-O. Edging God out. Spend a lot of time edging God out. In preparing sermons, one of the hardest parts for me and for actually many of the preachers I know is coming up with the stories and the examples that bring to life the theological message. Last night I went to bed unsure of the story. Two or three or four came to my mind, but none of them seemed to really fit what I was wanting to convey today, to go with the theology that I've just given you. Woke up this morning and saw the front page of the Chronicle, and I had my story. How many of you read about Dr. Frank Artress, the cardiac anesthesiologist? A few of you. Frank Artress lived in Modesto with his wife. Lived in Modesto, but he had actually many other places and homes, condominiums in several different cities, Palm Springs, Colorado. He lived a pretty ego-filled life. He was 50 years old, and he decided that he wanted to do something big and exciting. He and his wife went to Africa and were climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. As I read the story, I think they were pretty near the top. They had a lot of porters with them, helping them. And Frank got up early, took a lot of pictures, getting ready for the day before the hike. He did not do something essential. He did not defrost his drinking water for the day. That was, of course, ice solid from the night before. He thought, oh, it'll melt throughout the day as we're hiking. Well, it didn't. And he became more and more thirsty and dehydrated. And as a consequence, he started to have a great deal of trouble breathing. And being a doctor, he recognized the symptoms of what was happening to him. His lungs were filling with fluid. And he knew there was a very, very good chance, I think 75% chance, that he would not survive. He paused. And he pulled his wife aside and told her of his mistake. His little mistake from that morning of not having adequate drinking water. He realized he needed to get down fast. And he talked with the people in the expedition and the porters, and they explained that actually at this point there was no going back. You couldn't go down what they had just come up. The only way down was up and down the other side. And so, valiantly, he continued climbing until they came to the place to sleep for that night. Now he took a long pause, thinking that there was a very good chance he would not survive till morning. He and his wife talked about very big things and important things. And Frank says he realized a big mistake he had been making in his life. That when he thought of dying that night, when he looked back, he was not happy. He was not happy with how he had been spending his time and his days and his money. Frank soon realized that if he continued throughout that night where he was that he would not live. So he actually roused everybody, all the porters and everyone. And they began their climb again to the summit in the middle of the night. I think it took them 8 hours to get to the top. And I don't think Frank remembers much after that. But he does have a memory of being strapped. Let's see, got to the top. Porters ran fast down the other side. Brought back help, alerted help. Got him to the ranger station far down below. And then he remembers being strapped onto a makeshift stretcher that the porters were running him down the mountain on. They saved his life. Lots of times when we pause at crucial and critical times, as the days go by, we kind of forget the momentum of what happened in those moments. But Frank and his wife did not. They came back to Modesto, sold everything they had, moved to Tanzania, became doctors in a place that's ratio of doctors is one doctor to every roughly 60,000 patients. He's an anesthesiologist. His first patient was somebody who had some large protrusion that was deadly. And he said, all I know how to do is anesthesiology. Doctor handed him a scalpel and said, now's the time to learn something else. And he did. You can read the article, and also on the website there are ways that if you're so moved that you can contribute to medical care in a country that has almost none. I also read a story about doctors in this country going to the poorest places in this country. I don't know what the ratio was of people getting no treatment, but it was also a need that needed to be filled. To dwell in a place of compassion and trust. Pause there. And allow a new energy to come into you and to transform your life. Pause in that holy place, not alone, but together. Pause in that place of communion. The love is there to nourish us. All are welcome at God's table.